Welcome to Season 2 of The Blunderbuss, where we go on a journey into leadership failure. My name is Edward Vaughan. Join me as I travel far and wide on my special bus, The Blunderbuss, and have honest conversations with great leaders about some of their greatest leadership disasters. On The Blunderbuss, we think it's possible to learn much more from your moments of failure than your moments of success, if you know the magic secret. And we also know that failure can be fun, especially other people's. So today, the Blunderbuss has travelled all the way to North Sydney to the offices of the Centre for Public Christianity, and we're talking to Justine Toe. Have you ever made a mistake?
Do you mean in the last hour?
Yeah, so you have.
It's a roll call of mistakes.
Okay.
Life, just blundering from one bus to another. Really.
Okay, and does one stand out?
Yes. Oh, wow. This is kind of peering into the archives of Justine. But quite a while ago, I was teaching in the Faculty of Sport, Leisure and Tourism at UTS.
Okay.
And I was asked to give a lecture on race to the first year crowd of sport, leisure, tourism students. And I don't know what came over me, but I had a student population that was mostly white, and when I say mostly, I mean overwhelmingly.
Yes.
I mean, if there were non-white students in the cohort, we're talking about, you know, I could count them on less than two hands.
Sure.
Anyway, so I basically just drilled people for an hour. Drilled them, yeah. So I talked about instances of racial discrimination in kind of high-profile sports people's lives,
right,
as well as kind of informal. You know, well, I mean, I guess you could say it is formal in terms of workplace experiences of discrimination. And I didn't really want to talk too much about, like, my own experiences because I don't want people to come back at me and say, that's just you, right?
Yeah.
So I thought I'll gather all these experiences from America, from other places in the world, as well as Australia. But, I mean, I think it's about how you deliver that kind of information.
Because I'm going to say, like, at one level, this sounds great. It's a lecture. You've gathered information. You've delivered it coherently and cogently. What's the problem?
The problem is how you do it.
Oh,
it's not just information. Is not just the message. Right? The medium is the message.
And how not to do it?
How not to do it?
Okay.
And I found that out in the tutorial afterwards specifically. But before we get to that point, so if I could describe it this way, I felt like that lecture was an opportunity to release, you know, 20 years or so.
Okay.
A pent-up kind of rage and irritation at the injustice of people not really understanding it.
Right.
But at the same time, I reckon I ended up confirming a lot of people's kind of fears about, you know, when someone gets up to talk about racial injustice and, you know, it feels as though they're just there to make you feel bad, and I was there to make them feel bad.
So you were angry.
Yeah.
But was the problem that you got angry with the wrong group of people or the wrong way or?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this, and I think that what the problem was that, well, hang on, do you want me to just talk now? Because we're heading into the learning. Should I first describe what happened in the tutorial?
Okay, let's go to the tutorial. Yeah.
So in the tutorial section, I just got, it was just students howling at me.
And so this is presumably a small group.
Small group, yeah. So I had a tutorial afterwards as well.
Howling?
Well, in the sense of, oh, this is not real, everyone's equal.
Okay.
What you're like, that's that, I can't take that seriously. It was just the scoffing. Yeah,
really?
Yeah, and in some ways I suppose I deserved it. I don't think I realised at the time that I was so rage-filled in my delivery. I think I've come to that after reflection.
Okay.
But I do remember this young Chinese kid, he would have been 18, 19 or so, kind of, you know, usually quite jokey and boisterous in class, but he was looking down and I could see fear on his face as he sort of like caught, like snuck these sideways
like,
glasses.
Don't ask me anything.
Basically, yeah. And it was like, I didn't want to draw attention to him because it was like, but it does do my head in thinking, what does he learn from this experience?
Yes.
He learns keep your head down. Don't say anything because you stir up the anger of the mob.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, yes, I will very much say I was kind of like stoking that anger. and I shouldn't have done that.
And I suppose was the issue that Because there's an issue to get angry about, right? We've seen the Black Lives Matter stuff, and you know, there's plenty of stuff to be angry about if you have any sense of justice, whatever. But are you saying that the problem was that you got people defensive and so therefore not able to actually examine themselves?
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, yeah. So really the problem is that I was thinking of was that my what I was trying to do was not persuade people.
No.
I was trying to lecture them.
Or dump on them?
Yeah, I was. And I wonder if a better strategy would have been to do that in private, like through prayer or at God or with God, right?
Yep, yep.
Rather than just in front of everyone else.
Right, so process it in one place and then – and so if you had your time over again, how would you deliver it differently?
I would do it the way I've seen T.D. Jakes do it.
Yes, I know T.D. Jakes.
Oh, my gosh. Like that he did some kind of...
And just for the listeners, T.D. Jakes is a Pentecostal pastor from the United States.
Yes.
And incredibly powerful speaker.
He is.
I've heard him deliver some great talks around leadership.
Right. Okay. I have not. I mean, I've heard him do something at a Hillsong event, but I was like, oh, I don't know if this is quite my thing. But at the same time, I saw him talk to Carl Lentz. Interview him about... I saw him
and
do this.
Carl Lentz, formerly Hillsong pastor in New York until...
Relatively recently. But this was an incredible conversation around race.
Okay.
And the way that T.D. Jakes did it, I thought, was peerless.
Okay.
In the sense that he didn't, like, if he had done what I did, if he went angry, if he became angry black man, that would have just confirmed a lot of prejudices.
Yeah, stereotypes, all that kind of thing. Yeah.
But he was really wanting to convince and persuade people of the injustice of having to live as a black man in a society that is prejudiced.
Which is also what you wanted to do. So what did he do differently?
He was mournful and he was vulnerable.
Okay.
And he was... Okay. And he... What I thought was really interesting as well was that he kind of anticipated and engaged with people's, like, concerns or questions or criticisms perhaps as he went.
Right.
And he sort of did it in a way that helped to... kind of fend off and water down any fires that he might have sparked with anything that he might say.
Right. And how do you do that? Because, you know, you said your concern was, I didn't want people to say, well, it's just your story, Justine. How did he kind of not do that?
Well, it's kind of hard to... When he pulled out his iPhone at one point and he said, my iPhone can't see my face. As in the very... structure of the camera on the phone is not designed to work well with darker skin.
Really?
Yeah. And so if you want to talk about structural racism, that's a brilliant example.
Deep within the AI code.
That's right.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. I know, right? And so it's not just simply a thing of, oh, that's a misunderstanding, a social friction sort of thing. No, we're talking technology.
Wow.
And that's one instance. So that was really compelling. But I also thought as well that I really need to have a very firm sense of my own positioning within that space.
Okay.
And to be able to read the room really well.
Right.
Like, I'd been in that class for a long time. I knew what the students were like.
Presumably young, as you said.
Young.
White.
Quite a few quite privileged kids.
I was going to say privileged, right?
Yeah.
It's a university, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So it was just they were not responding very well to have, you know, this small Asian woman yelling at them.
I didn't love that.
No.
So more broadly about communication, what have you learned?
It's all other person centered. How's that? You know, weird, right?
Where would that come from?
No, right. Well, okay. So it's a radical love centered, other person centered ethic, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus says love your enemies.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, maybe we aren't going out and having skirmishes every day. But we are, you know, sometimes engaged in a war of words with other people.
Sure.
And a clash of, ideologies, ways of life, everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And so to be able to reach out and put their, and to put them at the center of what you're trying to do, I think is really helpful.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that I, as a minority, in inverted commas, it doesn't mean that I, as a minority, kind of have to... let other people walk over me, let's say, in an attempt to give them space to have their say in the conversation. But it's a way of, I guess, being hospitable, even from a place of
inviting
weakness.
Someone in?
But I do recognise that it's super complex.
Right.
Because in some ways I'm asking people to be nice to their oppressor.
Yes.
For example, right?
Right.
But there's something, and that doesn't really sit well with me, but I do wonder if at times and in certain places, Jesus is kind of pushing people towards that sort of vision.
Yes,
in
yes.
some way, in some form.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean, right, that if you're the victim of racial injustice that you just swallow it. Because,
no.
you know, you swallow it for 20 years and you end up like me as soon as you get a platform.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
But there's got to be ways of wrestling with what happened and being able to, as I said before, kind of like explore that with God or with a community mm-hmm, of mm-hmm. like-minded people. And to be able to be heard and seen and recognized and affirmed in that context
yes.
before you walk out into
yeah.
another context where people aren't going to be as receptive to what you have to say.
Yeah. This would take us further than – but Nelson Mandela comes into my mind.
Right.
And some of the ways in which I think he managed to do exactly that, you know, to speak to that sort of, you know, African kind of community and use some of their symbols like the rugby jersey that he wore down in the World Cup. 97 and, you know, the way that he dealt with that kind of stuff, very powerful.
I think it's all about being bigger than your circumstances would lead you to be in some ways.
Which feels inherently Christ-like in some
ways. It is Christ-like. It's a massive calling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when I process what I'm talking about and what you're saying through that lens, I'm like, it is unjust to be the victim.
Right.
And to have to kind of like rise above.
Yes, you punish twice in a sense. Like
yeah,
you
that's
experience
right.
the racism.
You absorb the burden.
You have to be the
yeah.
adult person.
Yeah.
So, what have you learned about failure?
Oh, my gosh. I've learned that it is – well, I mean, I haven't talked about this in this instance, but when I saw T.D. Jakes have that
yes.
conversation, I'd recently – like I wasn't giving a lecture, but I was doing some sort of video thing, and the feedback from the video editor was, it's a little bit angry. It wasn't race-related, so it was other things related.
Okay, okay.
But I'm angry about a lot of stuff, it turns okay. out. Anyway, so but then I saw the T.D. Jakes thing after that, and I was like, okay, yeah. So failure is constant, as I say. But, I mean, it's just a reminder, isn't it, to learn again.
Hmm.
And, like, in some ways, you could argue that God is infinitely patient. He gives us those infinite opportunities to repent, right, to see what you've been doing and to turn and do something else instead.
Yeah.
So I think it's I think failure really is an opportunity to just relearn again.
Yeah. Thanks to Justine Toe for sharing about one of her leadership mistakes and what she's learned. At the St. Michael's Institute, we want to encourage people to take more risks for the kingdom of God and have a crack at innovative ministries, which means sometimes we're going to get things wrong. We'd love it if you would subscribe and rate the Blunderbuss. It actually helps more people know about what we're doing. And go to our website at www.stmichaels.institute. And we'll see you next time on the Blunderbuss.